Yikes. Okay. Once upon a time, corporations, even nonprofit corporations, were forbidden from using their corporate treasury money to make contributions to candidates or to pay for communications that said vote for or vote against a candidate, so-called express advocacy for a candidate. That was part of the 1970s post-Watergate campaign finance law called the Federal Election Campaign Act, or FECA. Make your own joke here. The contributions provision stays in place. It is still forbidden for any corporation or union to give money or in-kind contributions to a federal candidate. Note that the rules in your state may be different. I live in Virginia. You can give corporate money to candidates. So all of these things are different. What changed is that rule that said you're not allowed to expressly advocate for election or defeat of candidates. And that was knocked down by first the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United, but that built on a whole string of other cases and then was followed up by a number of other cases in the Court of Appeals, notably the Speech Now case. And now, as long as you are independent of a candidate, you're allowed to spend your corporate resources, including nonprofit corporate resources, to pay for communications or engage in activities that tell people who they should vote for or who they shouldn't vote for. The caveats are you've got to be independent. One, that means, so number one, you have to be independent. You can't coordinate with a candidate or campaign. The idea here is that if your buddy, the candidate, says, it would be terrific if your organization would talk about how fabulous my record is on women's issues, and you go out and run those ads, you might as well have written that candidate a check because you're making an in-kind contribution to them. So you've got to stay at arm's length from the candidates, and there are incredibly complicated rules and even more complicated years of litigation on what is or is not coordination, and we can get into that if you'd like. The other thing is that you have to comply with your tax limits. So if you're a 501c, you've got that 501c4, for example, primary purpose test. You have to make sure that primarily you are engaged in activities that are social welfare activity, lobbying, or public education, or nonpartisan candidate activities. So you gotta make sure that by some measurement, and we don't actually know how to do that measurement, you have to make sure that you are engaged in the stuff that you're exempt for and only do that political stuff as a sideline. Happy birthday to Citizens United, by the way. It just turned 10 this week, yay. I won't make you sing. Also, if that primary purpose is too big a problem for your 501c, then you're going to set up a super PAC. A super PAC is a political committee like the old traditional kind of political committees, but unlike those political committees, which campaign finance law, at least under federal campaign finance law, limited as to who they could get money from, they could only get money from living, breathing people and not corporations and unions, and how much money they could get. An individual is limited to making a grant, a gift of no more than $5,000 a year to a hard money federal political committee. A super PAC can take money from corporations and unions. A super PAC can receive unlimited amounts of money from those donors and can spend unlimited amounts of money from those donors, provided they operate in that independent space we talked about. So what happens now is that we see people setting up a C3 that sets up a sister C4 that sets up the C4 in turn sets up maybe a super PAC, maybe a hard money PAC that can make contributions to candidates, maybe various state PACs so that they can give money to state and local candidates. How is this all legal? And the answer is that the Supreme Court seems to have given us their blessing. There was a case called Regan, not Reagan, it was the Treasury Secretary Donald Regan, versus Taxation with Representation of Washington, D.C., where relying entirely on what the Supreme Court said, the case was the IRS challenged this organization for engaging in excess lobbying activity. And they made a First Amendment argument saying that's, you know, you can't make us do that. And the answer they gave was the answer we gave during the previous panel. The Supreme Court said, there's a tax subsidy you're getting, so even though the First Amendment would otherwise allow you to do this stuff, you guys can't because you're a 501c3. But the key is that Justice Blackmun wrote a concurring opinion in which he mentioned the idea that, you know, I might have been more persuaded by this First Amendment argument you make, but for the fact that it's easy for you to set up a 501c4 organization. You've got a safety valve. So, yes, if there was more restrictions on your ability to use your resources for lobbying or political activity, I might have found this unconstitutional. But because it's easy for you to set up a C4 to pursue your mission that way with non-charitable resources, we're good, and the court is going to find in favor of the IRS here. And that Blackmun concurrence on Regan is the sort of touchstone for why you can build these constellations of organizations. So my first question for my wise panel, co-panelists is, do we think that a concurring opinion from 40 years ago, is still something that we should be relying on in setting up complex organizational structures? And I'm going to pick on Doug first.
Okay, because he knows I have extreme views on this topic.
Not like me.
Regan is the law of the land. It's not only a Supreme Court case, it's been reaffirmed in a D.C. Circuit Court case. Branch Ministries for Church at Pierce Creek. I never know exactly. I know the name of the church. What's the name of the case? I think it's Branch Ministries.
You're right.
Says that this is the deal. I also think it's...